Do you think that we forgot this ad because we're recording it in this way? Because we didn't. We just do it this way because it is easier and we like it better.
We can read a script this way.
Let us know if when you see the ads, you would rather us be in our regular podcast format.
All right, let's go. Yeah.
Real quick, before we get started, we have something really cool we want to tell you about.
Legendary Magic the Gathering artist Mark Poole's Playmat Collection Kickstarter is wrapping up, but there's one last chance to get his amazing art on a playmat.
The campaign features art from some of Poole's most iconic work like Birds of Paradise, Counterspell, and Library of Alexandria.
And they've also hit stretch goals that add more iconic options like Ancestral Recall and City of Brass.
There's also double-sided playmats, a table-length playmat, the Four Seasons of Urza playmat. This campaign has it all.
This is your last chance to grab all of these playmats, so use the link in the description below to check out the Mark Poole playmat collection before it's too late.
Now let's get into the podcast.
All right. You think you're good?
I'm good. Yeah, let's take it away.
What are we talking about? What is actually
today? Oh, it's you had a great idea. The clones and the free spells meta.
Today we're talking about clones and free interaction in CDH. Well, I said a different thing. What was the thing that I said?
You said something good. Hell yeah, the correct boxes. This is all logo stuff. Maybe something more, or clones and free spells dominating CEDH is the thing that you had.
We're going to talk about if clones and free spells are dominating CEDH.
Now, clones, free interaction, and those no bad cards, clone wars type stuff. Wrong Saiken and Ragishai in control in CEDH.
All right, whatever. This podcast is brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAYTOWIN5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
And I'm Dylan. Right now, I've realized that the window right here is open, and it normally is closed. So if the lighting looks different, let me know. I don't think we should change it. I don't know. Would it be different now? We've already started. It's kind of too late.
It would be so
weird. Do I look normal? Can you double check? Do I look like a human?
I mean, you were just saying how you... I mean, no, not right now.
Is it
he
good?
He looked like Pinocchio.
Do I look
from
washed
Shrek.
Out or something?
If anything, your complexion will match mine.
And, yeah, there we go.
And we were saying how we needed more light on your face
there
today.
There we go. Anyway,
so.
It's a double fix. Okay. Did I say the normal beginning?
Do it again, just
do
in
it
case.
Again. This podcast is brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAYTOWIN5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Oh, yeah, we did say that.
We said that, yeah.
Welcome
yeah.
to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
And I'm Dylan. This week, we are talking about free interaction and clones in CDH and whether or not they are dominating CDH right now. Is that roughly it? Did I get it?
That's exactly it, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to talk about a couple different things, but there have been some recent CDH lists, specifically Kinnan, these no bad cards Kinnan lists, which in my opinion do run bad cards. I think that's the joke. I'm not sure. These versions that just play as many Rhystic Studies and clones of Rhystic Studies as possible, and then as many free interaction spells like Commandeer and Misdirection, like extra Force of Wills as possible, and they just hope to live through the first couple turns of the game to stop the turbo decks, and then they steamroll in the 3, 4, 5 turns of the game after that.
And now a lot of other decks have started to pick the strategy up, right? We've seen Rograkh Ishai start to see some popularity.
Huge one recently, you don't check the internet very much, but we've had so many people asking us to talk about Rograkh Ishai, so we're going to talk a little bit about Rogg-Ishai
today. Yep.
Which is funny because I think like the day we had a short come out about how Jeskai's terrible, that Rogg-Ishai deck had like just won a tournament or something. It was just like worked out. We had talked about that before the Rogg-Ishai, whatever. So we're going to talk about that list. A lot of decks have been adapting more clone effects, ways to copy Rhystic Study. We've all acknowledged Rhystic Study is like the best card in the format for most decks. So having multiple copies of Rhystic Study and knowing that your opponents are going to cast Rhystic Study, so your copy enchantment and your mirror maid can be extra Rhystic Studies, that has been very popular. So we're going to talk about kind of all aspect of CDH right now.
Well, we don't want to blow all of our load right now.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, that was the whole topic, and now the
that
podcast
the
is over.
All right, see you later, guys. Yeah. All right.
Should we talk about like a philosophy, a rough idea? How do you want to start this? You have a little bit of an outline.
I separated it into the clone section of the podcast and the free interaction section of the podcast. And the clone section of the podcast, well, first of all, the free interaction section of the podcast, I have 5 cards written down for us to talk about. We don't need to talk about how good Force of Will is.
We're not going
to
talk about
how good Force of Negation is.
Fierce Guardianship or Deflecting Swat. I can't imagine we're going to talk about those. Those are powerful cards and they're part of the equation. We're not going to touch on them.
But there's like ones that we might have talked about a little bit in the past, but are cards that I think we really need to acknowledge a little bit more now, because they're not household names like Bono.
There's a couple that I hope that we talk, I don't want to spoil anything, but there's a couple in my mind that I'm hoping we talk about. I know I already mentioned 2 that we'll probably talk about.
Do you want to start with free interaction, or do you want to start with clones?
It all goes together. In my mind, I feel like we should start with clones, because clones is what comes first in this strategy, if that makes sense. Most of these strategies, their main goal is to land Rhystic Study as quickly as possible.
And there's really nothing new about
that.
Or anything new about playing free interaction and how good free interaction is in CEDH.
Yeah.
But there's some newer cards that people are playing that are higher in popularity that are making that better.
Yeah, new ways to do that. I personally personally, quick, it's not a divergent. It's more like on the same thing. I think Kinnan does this the best. Out of all of these decks that do this thing, early Rhystic Study, free interaction, survive to the late game, I personally think Kinnan does it the best. Kinnan's mana ability makes it so that these 4-mana clones that you're playing actually feel like 2-mana clones, which is why that they're more powerful. Spending 4 mana in a Jeskai deck is a little bit trickier than spending 4 mana in a Kinnan deck. Yes, Rograkh can make these clones a little bit easier to cast using some other ways, like, you know, Springleaf Drum and Mox Amber to make it a little bit better, but Kinnan does that mana thing so much more.
And I think that's why you'll see this happen in these lower color decks, and why this is not something that we've seen happen in Blue Farm recently, which is why we're not really going to talk much about Blue Farm after this right now.
Yeah, although you could. I have seen some Blue Farm lists will sneak a Steel Enchantment in there. They'll sneak a Mirror Maid in there, just one little extra.
But I haven't seen them go, like, as far all in. Yeah, I think they'll pick out one that works really well for them in their deck, but they, again, like, can't make 4 mana as easily as Kinnan can. They don't have access to just that card in their deck.
And they don't have the Rograkh that helps them with the more mana in other ways,
too,
right?
That's the other thing, too. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, okay. There's hair on the iPad.
Sure, yeah.
Which,
sure,
by the way, I feel so comfortable today with the iPad.
So much better than the stupid phone.
Way much better than the stupid phone. Yeah, I should get rid of my phone and only call people on an iPad.
It's a good idea. Get me an iPad, too, so that I can do that also.
Go, hello!
We'll be like businessmen at the Magic Cons talking on our big iPads.
I love that idea.
It's the future.
It's the future. Big. They keep making them bigger. This is how big they will be.
You asked for this, Steve Jobs.
All right, so
clones. You want to mention any clones?
Yeah, I want to talk about things that you can clone creatures with. Oh my god, what year?
Things that you can clone creatures with.
Things that clone creatures.
So we're going to start with not Mirror Maid and Copy Enchantment. We're going to start with the other ones.
Yeah, because creatures are more... I guess we can start with... Yeah, why do we need to talk about any of these creatures, actually? Actually, we don't need to talk about any of these creatures. No, you're right. Let me delete all of these cards.
Wait, wait, what was it?
We know what Phantasmal Image is.
Oh, we don't have to talk about Phantasmal Image.
We know
image.
What Flesh Mockingbird Duplicate, is. Mockingbird. Yeah, we know what they are. That's a whole section we can just delete.
Well, all of those cards go in these strategy decks because they're still good. Copying a Ranger Captain or copying a Consecrated Sphinx or something like that. These creature clones are quite powerful, but it's the cloning of the Rhystic Study that's important.
Creatures are nothing new.
These decks want it so that every time the Turbo deck casts one spell, they would like to draw several cards. Not only that, but they would also like the other opponents to draw several cards. I think it's better for these Turbo Rhystic Study decks if multiple players have the Rhystic Study.
I think that's true because I know with a Tali, if I'm only feeding one Rhystic Study, it's way easier for me to try to win than if I'm feeding two. Let's talk about these cards individually so that we know what they are as we're trying to compare them. So the main one that I think is the most important is Copy Enchantment. This is just literally 2 and a blue for a clone for an enchantment. It enters the battlefield as a copy of another enchantment in play. And this is really the crux of the strategy is you are hoping to either have your own Rhystic Study in play first or someone else has their Rhystic Study or a Mystic Remora even, worst case scenario.
Smothering Tithe would also be a great copy of these things.
Holy shit, right? These are the only three enchantments that most decks play that will stay around long enough for you to copy them.
Necropotence is also, you have like a very brief window to copy a Necropotence.
Very brief.
That could be quite good.
In the right deck, then that saves you from losing to the Necropotence player then as well, which is also very handy. But you're right. Yeah, Necropotence is another one. So, okay, there's four. I guess technically five with Necrodominance.
Yeah.
Other things that you could steal that could be around for more than one turn.
And I think this is most easily compared to Steel Enchantment and Mirror Maid. Weirdly, at first, I was like, why would you ever run Copy Enchantment? That just seems like strictly worse than Mirror Maid because, should we talk about what Mirror Maid does?
We should talk about what Mirror Maid
so
is.
We have
Mirror Maid is the same thing as Copy Enchantment, except there's actually a notable upside and a notable downside being that it cost an additional blue instead of a generic mana.
Weirdly relevant.
Weirdly relevant, yes. But you are allowed to copy an artifact that's in play with Mirror Maid because mirrors are artifacts and you make it out of a mirror, which is why it's an enchantment. You're enchanting a mirror.
Oh,
and that's
okay.
Why
we're magical.
The flavor's here. Yeah.
This is from like the Eldraine, like the Snow White set, right? Is that what this is?
One of them. I don't remember which one, but it's definitely
from
one of
them. We've been to Eldraine twice?
We went to Eldraine twice. Yeah, the first time was when Garrick was back. Remember when Garrett came back the first time? And then the second time is when Beseech the Mirror was printed, and there was no mirrors. Garrick in that set. More mirrors.
More mirrors.
Extra Snow White shit.
That extra blue pip is weirdly, like, relevant. That means that Mirror Maid's a little bit harder to cast off of a Soul Ring, off of a Mana Vault, off of the extra colorless mana that you're able to make, whereas Copy Enchantment can be easily cast off of Lotus Petal Ancient Tomb. You know what I mean? Like, that weird difference, it doesn't sound like a lot. Yes, any deck can cast Mirror Maid, but they can maybe cast Copy Enchantment a turn earlier. And in CDH, when you're playing the game for maybe three turns, if you're one of these decks, hopefully a little bit longer, but like waiting a whole turn could be 30% of your fucking game.
Yeah, or even on turn one, when like, again, Lotus Petal and Ancient Tomb is very easy to assemble. And I mean, it's probably rare that someone else has that for a Rhystic Study before you. But even if they have a fish, again, it's not the end of the world for a 3-mana Mystic Remora. I would still probably play that card in every single blue deck.
And Kinnan specifically does this particularly well, because again, in Kinnan, 3-mana often is going to feel like 2-mana with a little bit of extra mana still floating after, you know what I mean? 2 permanents with Kinnan out is going to tap for 4-mana. So when you spend 3-mana on this and then you still have a mana left over for a Birds of Paradise or to hold up Veil of Summer, I don't know, whatever, that's really, really quite good in Kinnan. And I think why the strategy is so good in that deck. They need to land the card advantage engine and they can do it the easiest because of Kinnan.
Exactly, yeah. And this is also why, and we've talked about Steel Enchantment a little bit too. This is just blue for an aura that lets you literally steal an enchantment from somebody else. And this is kind of why this one is also a little bit harder, because not only does it have the same, you know, downsides of these cards where they rely on another one of these enchantments to be in play, but it also doesn't give you the same out to the other turbo decks as Copy Enchantment does, because you're still at the liberty of there only being one Rhystic Study, but you would obviously way rather have it be your Rhystic Study. And if you're on the receiving end of a Steel Enchantment, that's fucking brutal.
Right. Yeah, and especially like if you're one of these turbo grind decks, these no bad cards lists, you would rather you and an opponent have a Rhystic Study against that one turbo deck over there so that you each have an opportunity to stop the turbo deck. Because your whole goal for the first like 3 turns of the game, normally, not always, but normally is just to stay alive. You just want to not die to Ral. You want to not die to Rog'Sai. You want to not die to Itali. And then once you're in the late game, Kinnan really takes over. And I think that's why this deck is so powerful, because it tricks a scared tournament mind. Does that make sense? Like in a tournament, you're afraid to lose to the turbo deck. It's scary. They're going to lose on turn two before you get a chance to do anything. So you should team up with the Kinnan player so that you both have Rhystic Studies so that you can beat the turbo deck. The issue is it's a demon deal. If you survive until turn four with Kinnan, you're not winning that game.
You're not winning that game either. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You have to win in between the turbo deck and in between when Kinnan can untap with like all of that mana that they have there.
Right, yeah. Once the Enduring Vitality and the Seedworm uses out and they pass the turn and no one does anything in the end step to get rid of any of those things,
you're not winning that game.
Kinnan has won that game. It may not feel like it, and they're going to talk to you and tell you like, no, I just need this stuff to stop the Rog'Sai player from going off again. And technically, that's true. They do need that to happen. You don't need that to happen, though.
No, exactly. Not necessarily. Yeah.
And just because it sounds good in your ears, like, yes, you'll stay alive an extra turn. We've talked about this before. It can be kind of a demon deal.
If you're not able to capitalize off of that, if you can get, like, them to stop the Rog'Sai player from winning and then you go to win the game, like, I feel like that is the perfect spot to be to, like, get around what these decks are trying to do. We've talked a lot about this recently, but just, like, hearing what your opponents are saying and not necessarily listening to them is really important, because like you're trying to get information based on what they're saying and they're gonna like kind of give away what their strategy is they also need to stay alive, but you need to be able to win the game before they can untap.
It's important to remember that you, as the non-Kinnan player, as the non-turbo clone player, what you want to happen is for you to win the game. Not dying to turbo deck is part of that, but if the decision is die right now to turbo deck or die to the Seedborn Muse Kinnan player right afterwards, you're still losing that game no matter what. So you, like you said, you have to figure out a way to Final Fortune or do something to sneak in between the moment where the turbo player has finally been stopped and before the Kinnan player makes their pivot turn, which can normally happen, I think, around turn three. Once the Kinnan deck can pass the turn on turn three and be alive still, it gets easier and easier for them to win the game, and you'll feel like you're in a good spot because you haven't lost to the turbo deck, but you've been deceived because you're losing to the Kinnan deck very slowly.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. You haven't lost to the turbo deck, but you're still not walking away from this table with 5 or even 1 point.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it's important to remember that, like,
we sound like we've lost to Tyler a lot.
We've lost to Tyler a lot. Yeah, we've lost to Tyler and Kinnan a lot. And, like, it's a powerful deck.
That's why.
And you'll see at a lot of tournaments, these Kinnan players, they have to talk a lot. They're going to be politicking a lot. They're going to be making deals. That's what they have to do. That's part of the strategy. Particularly this, like, turbo Ristic Study strategy, because your strategy doesn't progress you towards winning the game. Ristic Study doesn't progress you towards winning the game the same way that Underworld Breach does. In theory, it does, but it sort of gets you time. So they have to communicate with the other players, don't blow up my Ristic Study, because yes, Ristic Study will help me win the game. They'll tell you it can also stop the Rock Side player from winning the game. So it's a very tricky space to be in, for sure. And why this deck is so good, because it preys on the fears that you would have in tournaments.
And that's kind of why, like, other people have gone, okay, well, I'm just going to have my own Ristic Study then too, is that now that way I can go card for card with Kinnan, and at least that way that will give me more windows and more chances to be able to interact with what they're doing. It's certainly better than, like, having, I don't know, like a Burgi in that scenario.
Right.
I think that's also part of the reason why, like, other decks have started to adopt this too. And, like, also because Clever Impersonator is an insane card. Like, this
that's
is something that lets
about.
You copy any permanent that's in play, which means that it can be creatures. It can be a Gaia's Cradle, right? Can't it?
Double check. I don't know that I've
it
ever.
It would not be very clever if it could not copy.
Can't even copy a Stinky Land.
Can't even copy a Stinky Land.
Yeah, what does Clever Impersonator do? Because that's part of this Clone War.
Any non-land permanent. This card sucks.
I knew I hadn't seen
this?
That for a reason.
Wow, I was about to be like, no wonder why this card is so good.
What about Flash Photography? That's a new one that we didn't talk about, I don't think, during the Final Fantasy review.
Well, because it wasn't in the Final Fantasy set.
Oh.
And we only talked about it during the live podcast because it was only released as part of the holiday bundle.
It wasn't even a Commander product. It was a Legolas's Quick Reflexes situation.
Exactly, yeah. So the timing had worked out that it was, like, announced at MagicCon, which is why we talked about it in the MagicCon podcast.
This one, which you should go watch. This card is very cool and neat.
I want to say I was the highest on this.
Were you high on this? Okay.
I was at least, like, going, I think this is something.
I imagine I thought that 4 mana was too much. I'm going to guess that I thought 4 mana was too much for this effect.
Yeah, but there's a couple of other things that make you go, like, well, who cares about it? Number one is that it's create a token that's a copy of target permanent.
Target permanent.
This is target permanent.
Gaia's Cradle.
Gaia's Cradle. The only reason why Kinnan likes Clever Impersonator more is because you can spin into Clever Impersonator. But this is still so cracked because it's a sorcery, but it has flash if it targets a permanent you control. So if you already have a Ristic Study, now you can get an instant speed Ristic Study and then untap with it and be like, what are you going to do? Try to interact with my win that I'm going to have?
Is it also weirdly like protection for your commander? Like if someone tries to remove your Kinnan, you make a copy of the Kinnan and then you legend rule sacrifice your original Kinnan, then you have a token copy of Kinnan that's not being targeted?
Now your Fatal Push is fizzled.
Interesting choice option to use, Fatal Push being a card that we don't play. But yes, this is a way that you can protect your thing.
Two mana creature Tarmogoyf is on my mind.
Always, yeah. But yeah, this could dodge a Swords to Plowshare or something like that. Like it could still offer protection at instant speed, which is super cool.
Plus it has Flashback.
Flashback, yeah. For like a lot of mana though, right?
Well, yeah, for 4 and 2 blue,
so
but it still
mana.
Has flash if you target a permanent you control from the graveyard, right?
Oh, that is
like,
pretty
that's
nice.
Still text that's on the card.
Yeah, that is pretty good.
Yeah, it makes 6 mana, but we're glazing Kinnan for making a billion mana all of the time. And in the late game scenarios where they already made a clone of like your Smothering Tithe, this flashed back to be a second Smothering Tithe is gonna whop your ass so hard.
Yeah, and the Smothering Tithe in Kinnan specifically, the treasures, anytime that Kinnan can make treasures, and I think that's why Rog Ishai has seen popularity, because why rely on cloning somebody else's Smothering Tithe when you can just play your own? But Kinnan uses those Smothering Tithe treasures so well. When every treasure is 2 mana, holy shit.
What I think it works extra well in Kinnan is because they get to play so many of these and then also go, well, I don't need to play the One Ring because the One Ring is actually bad.
Right.
So when the One Ring will be good when I have Seedborn Muse in play, I only need it if I flip into a clone while someone else has it. It's kind of superfluous for the deck. You can win so easily without the One Ring with all of the other advantage engines that you have in the deck. And again, like Mirror Maid and all of these other 4 mana ones that we talked about can just clone the One Ring when it comes up too.
And Kinnan is just like, I keep on doubling down on why Kinnan is so powerful, but it uses all of the mid-range tools that other decks use better than they do. It's a better One Ring deck than any other deck, and it doesn't need to play the One Ring, because as soon as you play the One Ring, they're going to copy it, and they have Seedborn Muse, and they're drawn way more cards than you, and they can use all those cards quicker because Kinnan makes them more mana so easily. So the strategy is just so perfect for that deck.
That's the thing, it's great.
I think it was Freedom Waffle that started this no bad cards list, right?
I believe so, yeah.
So shout out Freedom Waffle for figuring this out, that there's better ways to build Kinnan or whatever.
Oh, wow, we shouldn't put bad cards in our deck?
Wait a minute, I want to go back to the bad cards thing, because what's the fucking 1 mana transmute card? That card is a bad card.
Oh, Dizzy Spell is
a bad card. Dizzy Spell is bad. bad. But
is that just another fish?
It's a 4-mana Mystic Remora. That's good.
Wow,
and Kinnan,
yeah.
That's good because 2 permanents tap for 4 mana, and now it's weirdly kind of like a 2-mana Mystic Remora, which is really a great rate, I think.
Which is still a great rate, yeah.
Dizzy Spell is a bad card. Don't get it twisted. But Transmute is interesting. They can't counter the Transmute.
It transmutes,
you know what I mean?
Into a good card. And it's blue is another thing,
blue.
Which I think is going to...
can always pitch it.
I think, yeah, this is going to go right into our next section, which is the free interaction.
The free interaction. Oftentimes being a blue card is helpful there.
There's one card in particular I would like to talk about.
Are we going to a free interaction or are we sticking... Because I have one more clone that I want to talk about.
Oh, you have another clone? Oh, what's your other clone?
It's a surprise clone. And I don't know that this one is good. And I don't even know if I remember the name.
If you say Stunt Double as another Flash clone.
No, it's another mirror card. It's the one that's a land on the backside, but it only copies your own things. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Mirror, not Mirror Pool. Cursed Mirror.
That's an Itali card. I know that.
Yeah, that's not it. It's a blue MDFC. I think it's one of the ones that
comes untapped. I know the card you're talking
about.
It's from like one of our more recent returns, the Zendikar.
I think that card is honestly kind of good. If you're going all in, like my plan is to copy Enchantment as many Rhystics as possible, eventually I'll just copy my own copy Enchantment.
Because I have my own,
copy another thing. And then it's a land on at its worst. I think it's an untapped land. If it is an untapped land, I think this card is really, really good. If it's a tap land,
it's
I'm
for
wrong.
Sure a tap land.
It's
yeah.
tap Lands.
Everything in that original Zendikar block that was not from the cycle that was
the card that I'm talking about
smashing.
Is not original Zendikar block. It's an MDFC. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
From the original Zendikar block where we got the MDFCs is what I was trying to say.
We didn't get original MDFCs in original Zendikar block.
I'm saying the original Zendikar block that we got MDFCs. I'm not saying that's all one thought. So it's when we went back to Zendikar for the third time.
You saying the original Zendikar is tripping me up. I apologize.
I understand why.
The Zendikar block that MDFCs were introduced in.
Oh, that's a
that's
way
what
better
you're
way
saying?
To say that.
That's
yeah.
what you're saying, I think. Okay.
Well, it's not called Mirror Anything because it doesn't come up.
Whatever it is, the
mirror.
Card is on screen, and I think that card is kind of reasonable in this strategy.
It is a tap land, and it can only copy things you control. Can it copy anything, or is it only creatures?
I think it might just be creatures, which would make it a lot worse than all these other things.
But still notable.
Sorry to cut you off. What did you want to talk about the free interaction stuff?
I think that Commandeer is a stupid name for a card that's just Commander with an additional E in it.
Oh, that one extra E makes
Commander.
Us... Commandeer.
Nah,
makes
that's
a whole
dumb.
Different thing.
And that's the only thing I have to say about it.
Commandeer is real good. It is 7 mana for an instant that allows you to gain control of target non-creature spell your opponent controls, but you have to pitch 2 blue cards in order to cast it for free. If it resolves, it's so cracked. It's insane.
But it is backbreaking if it is countered.
If you are countered, it launches you out of the game. And I think this is where, like, Kinnan players will get away with chattering. Like, let me gain control of the Rhystic Study. No, absolutely not. Let any other deck have control of the Rhystic Study. If there's one Kinnan player, 3 for 0s themselves, they are gone. I guess it depends on the interaction. It might not be an actual 3 for 0. But if they're down 3 cards and 2 of them are blue cards, they're going to have a hard time clawing out of that. So if you can counter the Commandeer, obviously,
I think
stop
you should.
The Commandeer.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Because, like, this is a card that allows these players to, like, mulligan to 3 and have a great hand.
Yeah, I'm just going to Commandeer the first Mystic Remora and that'll be it.
Great, okay, yeah. Or, like, if someone gives Rhystic Study or something like that. Yeah, right? You can mulligan to 4, play, like, 1 land, and then be all set and ready to go.
It can be so good. It's important to remember non-creature. It can't take a creature.
Can't take Itali.
It can't take an Itali, but any non-creature, it's super powerful, and it's all part of this, like, free strategy of, like, I want to tap out for Rhystic Studies on my turn, and then the interaction that I'm going to draw is going to be free interaction, because that's part of it, too. The point of the interaction is for me to stay alive. If I have the opportunity to play 2 Rhystic Studies into play, but then I'm tapped out, and the Flusterstorm in my hand doesn't work anymore, that's a bad move. But if I can play 1 Rhystic Study and leave up mana, and I know for a fact that I have this Flusterstorm that I can use, that's a good move, because then you're making sure that you're going to be able to untap. So it's important to know that, like, you don't have to just tap out for all of the engines every single time. 1, because of that reason, you want to leave up interaction. But 2, because if you can avoid looking like the threat in one of these strategies, that's really good.
I think that's also really important, because I think the big thing about this, and there's a couple other free interactive spells I want
to
talk
we'll
about.
We'll get to in a second.
I think that we keep going back to how these decks have to talk a lot.
They have to chatter.
And I think this is also, like, a really important aspect of it. It's like, you can't just, like, pick up this deck and go, oh, I'm going to win a tournament. I'm going to win a tournament. It's going to be so easy because I have no bad cards in my deck.
Right now,
I think especially especially with the Rograk Ishai versions of this deck that are coming out now. You gotta chatter.
Because you're kind of like a control deck. These decks are the effective control decks of CDH. They're not as controlling as you may see other control decks in other formats. There's not playing any Wrath of Gods. We're not destroying everything. But they are trying to control the tempo of the game until they're ready to win.
Control always just means stay alive.
Stay
and in
alive.
Other formats, Wrath of God is way more relevant to be used to stay alive. But in our format, Commandeer just happens to be way more relevant.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes like talking is the best way to stay alive, and they'll have to do that a lot.
Tired of juggling sales tools or spending hours on prospecting just to book a few meetings? Meet Apollo, the go-to-market platform for finding leads, connecting with buyers, and closing deals all in one place. Apollo gives you access to over 210 million contacts and AI that handles all your busy work, finding leads, drafting emails, and even prioritizing your day. So stop paying for five different sales tools when one does it all. Visit apollo.io and sign up free today.
Another card that I want to talk about is Mindbreak Trap, which is like kind of a card that's not really, you know, new news or anything like that. But dude, I keep getting blown out by this card.
The and more like, we play Turbo, the more we're going to get blown out by Mindbreak Trap.
It's not even like in, not even just in Atali, like even in Blue Farm, I'm getting blown out.
Was that what you were talking about yesterday? Was Blue Farm or whatever?
Yeah,
the other
I
day?
Was playing Blue Farm. Okay. Yeah, I had this, dude, this was insane. So I'm going after Rog'Sai, and there's a Jund Dargo deck in this pod. And then the third deck is, I think a slower deck. It might have been in. But either way, I didn't feel good going after Rog'Sai and then getting like my second turn isn't really going to be much because now they're going to get a third turn before me and I don't have interaction in my hand. So I need to try to push now. I had a Vampiric Tutor for my turn one play.
I'm familiar with the card.
The Rog'Sai player was able to go for a turn one wheel, but I was still able to get my Vamp Tutor off so that way I could put Mnemonic Betrayal on top of my library.
A good one. Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Now that everyone has wheeled, I might be able to do something with this. But I didn't have the mana on my turn two to be able to just cast the Mnemonic Betrayal and keep going.
Yeah.
So I played land number two and I cast Final Fortune.
Hmm.
On my third turn, I played my City of Traders and I tapped my other two lands and I cast Mnemonic Betrayal and I was able to play out a bunch of mana like a Tinderwall, a Mana Vault, a Culling Ritual, and I got the Rog'Sai player's Underworld Breach, which was in their opening wheeled hand, into play. This was really tough. I had the tutor to put a LED on top of my library, and I could either wheel or I could cast Tataru Taru. But I was really low on cards in my graveyard for Underworld Breach, and in order to do this, I needed six more so that I could tutor again and I could Tataru Taru. And then, okay, I can get LED. I get a field a little bit more, but I still need, like, to find Brain Freeze. I need to do this again. And Altar of Dementia can't sacrifice Tataru Taru because Tataru Taru's power is zero. It's not mana value. That's so dumb. Yeah. I ended up casting the wheel with the Lion's Eye Diamond on top of my library. And now I'm like, I don't even care if there's a counterspell that someone draws into because I have Underworld Breach already. I'll just recast Lion's Eye Diamond. Well, you know what? The one only counterspell that everyone found was one copy of Mindbreak Trap.
Right then when you cast the wheel.
Right then when I cast the Lion's Eye Diamond.
Oh,
so like the wheel went off, it perfectly wheeled them into.
I understand.
So like I felt safe. I was like, they could draw Fierce Guardianship and I don't care. They could draw Force of Will and I won't care.
Sometimes it just happens. Like there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah. I guess looking back, like, you know, Force of Negation also would have been disastrous there too.
Sure.
But does Rog'Sai even play that?
I don't.
See, exactly.
Yeah, whereas I still play Mindbreak Trap and Rog'Sai, which is, it's a weird one, but like the fact that it's no card disadvantage and you can very easily like buy yourself one extra turn by stopping the turbo player or whatever, I think it's quite good. And it also just like, if you do go into like the turn three, turn four situation with Rog'Sai and someone does have a bunch of interaction, it can still on your turn be a free interaction if they cast more spells.
We also saw the exact downside of Mindbreak Trap in that game because the only interactive spell I had in my wheeled hand was Mindbreak Trap and no one else had cast any other spells.
Yeah, it can be bad. Yeah, it can be bad.
It is tough when you are pushing and I just feel like this card has been beating me in every single capacity. Whether I'm playing the card or not.
Yeah, it's funny too because I feel like in Atali and even Blue Farm maybe it's a little bit trickier to play around that. I feel like with Rog'Sai, it's like one of the first thing that comes to my mind to figure out if I can afford to play around Mindbreak Trap or not. Because a lot of the other things, I can't really play around them in the dark. Do you know what I mean? Like there's only so much you can do. Whereas I'm talking specifically with Rog'Sai, I will decide whether or not to play Rog if I think it can allow me to play around Mindbreak Trap or something like that. For instance, if I can set up a turn two Gnaws off of Culling the Weak and just ad nauseum, just like that, with those two spells, I'm going to cast Rograk first on my first turn and just like let it sit there. If I can get away with not doing that, I'll wait for Rog'Sai and cast it on my second turn. So like, if I have to already cast three spells on my second turn, I will wait to cast Rog and I'll just cast them on my third turn so that I don't risk him going away on that first turn cycle. Like, there's a lot of play to Mind Break Trap of like when you can decide to play around it and when you can't. So that part of it is fun, but it's also just so good against any turbo deck.
Well, that's the thing. Like, and I'm used to my Atali brain where I'm like, well, even if I like play around Mind Break Trap to cast Atali, I'm going to cast four spells after that that they're going to be able to hit anyway.
Right. Whereas with Rog, if I can resolve the ad nauseum and you have Mind Break Trap after that, that's fine because I'll have 30 cards in my hand. I'll have the Red Blast for the Mind Break Trap then. You know what I mean?
Exactly,
like, there's things you can do.
No, I wonder why one deck sees more play than the other.
Yeah. Also, Trap, people rat on themselves a lot. I've talked about this a lot, but people will say, what's that, your second spell? Okay, I let it resolve. And like, yes, sometimes they bluff or whatever, and that's part of it.
Like, it could be a Flusterstorm too.
Right, yeah, it could be a Flusterstorm too, but they tell you, and once they tell you, Mind Break Trap becomes a lot worse against a lot of Storm decks once the Storm player knows that the Mind Break Trap is there. They can play around it, they just, like, they might not if they, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it can be easily forgettable too, yeah.
Should we talk about some more free interaction?
Dude, I saw Subtlety in a tournament-winning deck.
Subtlety is almost good. I think it's good.
I think the creature restriction is hard, but I feel like that is getting more and more opportunistic, though, at the same time. Like, it's also just, like, a blue card. Like, if you end up pitching it to Commandeer or Force of Will, too, that's also fine.
You can flip it off of Kinnan, you know what I mean?
Which
that's kind of crazy.
Great, yeah. And, like, it's also helpful that, like, it kind of tempos your opponent too. What does it do? It puts it in your opponent's
top or bottom. They get to decide.
So it's either a hard counter spell
or they have to redraw it. Yeah.
Yeah. And it tempos them like pretty significantly.
A lot of the times, if you time it out right against the right deck, it's just Force of Will. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just going to feel like the exact same. There are situations when it's bad, but with the increase of Hexing Squelcher and things like that, that specifically say can't be countered, I think Subtlety's wording is super relevant, which is the same reason why Mind Break Trap has gotten a little bit of extra points recently, because we can't really deny that Hexing Squelcher is a mainstay in CDH at this point. It is so fucking good in every deck that can play it. And yes, you don't want to play cards that specifically are good against one thing, but the fact that Subtlety can stop the Hexing Squelcher and put it on top of their library or get rid of it forever, that's a real thing that is worth considering. And it does other stuff too, you know what I mean? It does soft counter the Thassa's Oracle. It does do certain things against Ral, if you want to counter the turn one Ral or whatever. And if they have to use a ritual to cast turn one Ral on turn two, they're not going to have four mana quite as easily, right?
The same thing with Atali, too. Yeah, right? It kind of acts like as a two-card silence against a lot of these decks where, like, once it goes back to their hand, they can't really do anything else this turn, or they have to wait around until the next turn. So, like, a lot of times, you just need that one window.
And the turbo decks, they know that most counter spells are negates. They're aware of that, so they're trying to play into that when possible. They're trying to sneak the creatures in when they can. They're trying to put Grand Abolisher in first before they are open themselves up to a Force of Negation or something like that. So when you can Subtlety the Grand Abolisher, because they think that you only have Force of Negation or whatever, that can be really, really good at buying you just a little bit of extra time. And if you're in these Rhystic Study decks, that's like really fucking good.
That's the thing. Yeah, so long as you're built around these other draw engines. I would not put this in like blue farm. I would not put this in like any old blue deck that is not built around amassing the most draw engines as you possibly can, because I think this is really good in conjunction with something else. Because like, okay, we got rid of the Grand Abolisher very easily. They still
then
have
what?
All the winning cards
in
their
hand. They still have the win.
Yeah.
They still have the win after that.
So if you don't have like further interaction to continue to back something else up, there are times where it can time walk the table or at least a player, but it's not always going to, you know, stop players in their tracks depending on exactly what they have. So that's kind of why I like it in these strategies in particular.
And that card disadvantage is a real thing. Having to go down two cards against only one player and your other two opponents don't lose any cards in the interaction, that's real bad.
Especially if we also had to Force of Will and Commandeer this game.
Right. Yeah, but if you have the Rhystic Study in play, suddenly it's not quite as bad.
Two of them.
You know what I mean? Exactly. Two of them. Someone casts a spell and you're drawing four cards. Okay, well now going two to stop their win, that doesn't matter because if they have more stuff, that's another four cards for me. Yeah. It spirals out of control so quickly.
I don't understand why it couldn't have been a bounce spell. It should have been a bounce spell. Make it cost one more actual mana and make it like remove a creature from play too.
Oh my God. If you could just like for free flash it in and bounce a creature that's already in play.
I mean, that's basically what the white one does. Solitude does that.
But Solitude doesn't go the other way. It doesn't stop it on the stack. You can't do both. I don't think you can do both for free. Both for free would be really good.
Both for free would be way too good.
Solitude is another card that I do think about from time to time.
I think it's, again, better for like these heavy clone decks that want to just have like three Rhystic Studies in play or something like that.
But even still, like, I think Subtlety is just better. Like, against most of the creature decks that I'm thinking, like Solitude against Atali, I guess, yeah, you can stop in response to a Twin Flame. That could be quite good.
Oh, but, yeah, no, I feel like I would always want subtlety over solitude.
Right.
Yeah.
Against Itali. Against Ral.
Also, just because, like, I'm always going to have more blue cards in my deck than white cards, too. Right. So just, like, giving me a better chance to be able to use this for free.
Your cards being blue is relevant because you're playing Force of Will and you're playing Commandeer and you're playing another one that we can probably talk about, Misdirection.
That is the other one on my list, too.
Misdirection is also good.
This is also seeing a lot more play. And again, it's not like it's great. Like, it only targets very specific things that have one target, and like, it doesn't stop Thassa's Oracle, it doesn't stop Demonic Consultation, it does not stop Ad Nauseam, or it does not stop Necropotence, it does not stop the cast of Itali. However, free interaction is free interaction, and a lot of times what'll happen is the decks that are pushing really hard are like, I have one piece of protection.
Right.
And if you have one thing to stop their one piece of protection, they go, crap, I lose.
And Misdirection is a great second piece of interaction. It's a terrible first piece of interaction. Like you said, it doesn't stop the Ad Nauseam, but if they Ad Nause and you cast Dispel, whatever, and they have another piece, a Red Blast on top, then you can misdirect the Red Blast. So then you can be really helpful there. And it's also really good at protecting your own win. I've seen some Rog Psi pilots play it as well, because it's really good at protecting your, if you cast the Ad Nauseam and they cast Force of Will, you can misdirect their Force of Will and you can protect your own win really well.
It's just way easier as a protection piece. Yeah, that makes sense.
So I do like it in that way. For me, I'm too nervous to put another 5-drop in my deck because I rely on Ad Nauseam kind of a lot. I feel like I prefer casting the turn 2 Nauseam over the turn 1 Necro because it feels different somehow.
All eyes on you.
Turn 2 Nauseam on my main phase. Rock'side can win from right there. Whereas, like, normally, yes, Necro can as well. But Necro, you do the turn 1 Necro, and then you gotta wait, and then everyone tries to make you a threat for the whole turn cycle. Then you have to get back to yourself. It's a little bit different. So I like being able to make sure that my Ad Nauseam is still a viable strategy, and adding another 5-drop makes me nervous. But it doesn't change the fact that Misdirection is, like, a great piece of protective interaction, and it's just free. It's just
That's
good.
The thing, yeah. And the last card I had on here was Snapback.
Snapback, yeah.
Because this is one we talked about a little. We talked about this one a little bit ago, and I started seeing it in more decks, and I don't know if that's something we did, but...
I don't think so, but maybe.
I think there's a lot of smart players that also came to the same conclusion of, like, hey, I need more things to deal with on the board permanence, because, yeah, subtlety is nice at getting Grand Abolisher or a Hexing Squelcher, that's a better example, yeah. Off of the stack when it comes
example,
up.
Yeah.
Yeah. But sometimes, like, they get the Hexing Squelcher out a turn early before they go to push, and it doesn't make sense to subtlety them at that point.
Right.
Or, like, it's just you don't have it at that point either. It's nice to have something that removes something that is on the board for free. I just put it in my blue farm list.
Love it.
I'm
yeah.
really happy with it.
I've
so
been
far.
Loving it in Rock'side. I had a situation the other day where I put together a Necro thing and I got unlucky. I drew 30 cards and I just didn't see any of the flash enablers. I had nothing to do, but it was like an early one. It was like a turn one, or maybe, I don't know, it might have been turn two or something, but I was able to use Snapback to just bounce an attacker. Like, I had gone too low. It was the only attacker in play. So in my end step, I'm like, I can't win right now, but I can for free snap back the one attacker, and there's no other attackers in play. So this probably guarantees I still get to my next turn. You
it's
know what
a
I mean?
Free time walk.
And then I can still sculpt a perfect seven and still try to go for a win later. So even if it doesn't do what it's supposed to do, it can still do other things, which I think is really cool. And the offer you can't refuse thing, it's just a free spell that you can cast on anything and counter it with an offer to be a one mana, make two treasures at the cost of 3 total cards. It's like Commandeer for 2 treasures.
Yeah, but
I mean?
If you only need to cast one card, then yeah.
There are a couple other free counters. Spells that I wanted to talk about. Can I bring them up and see if we can find them?
Yeah, what are the other ones
the
you're
first
of?
One is bad. It's Thwart. I know this one's not good.
Oh, okay, yeah. My list was cards I saw in tournament winning deck list. Yeah, but you are right. There are a couple of other free counter spells that are out there.
I think Thwart is bad. I think it's Thwart is discard 3 islands to counter spell for free.
We should be looking at these free spells more now that we know that these are the ones. So even though we might think they're bad, maybe they have got more
maybe
leeway
in the
than
right
we
deck.
Think.
Maybe
yeah.
Urza. We just saw Urza, Surveillance Cam or whatever. Maybe Urza could play yeah. A card like this.
You're right. It is 3 islands, and that is a lot of islands, though.
That's
yeah.
a lot. Yeah, and I don't think a lot of decks can play this, but we're talking about free interaction and in these Clone Wars things. If you're in a mono blue strategy, I do think Thwart is on the table.
Not having the mana in play is yeah. also extremely detrimental at some point
yeah.
then, too.
Rog, I only play 3 islands in Rog, so that's just, there's only 3 in the deck, but maybe another deck could play where you're, like, drawing a whole bunch of cards and you're maybe more 2-color, blue-black or something like that.
Yeah, maybe more blue-black. I feel like Urza normally doesn't have any cards in their hands when I see Urza.
Not
they're like
a ton,
way more on the board.
That's true. What we've seen from Urza in the past, but if Urza adapts this strategy, Urza makes a ton of mana.
Urza does make a ton of mana.
And Urza always has blue cards because they're mono blue. Maybe there's a world where this strategy could be built around Urza. You have the Sewer Valence came now, so you have an instant speed way to win off of two mana once Urza's
and
in play.
And it gives you an excuse to cut some of like the colorless lands, I would think, then too, that like fuck up a lot of your opening hands, but you're just like playing because you're a monocolor deck. And like, yeah, Fumori Vault can sometimes be good, but I think if you're in a situation where you're activating Fumori Vault, you are losing the game anyway.
Yeah, and I think it's better. Like, there are other things that work really well with a bunch of islands. Daze is a card that I joke about a ton and I think is really good in Rock'Side, and I don't know how good it is in Urza, but if you're playing more islands and you can turn Daze on, a lot of times the Rock'Side players, the Turbo players, they're cutting it real tight. That four spike, one mana, that's going to be
a counter spell. Yeah.
That's going to be it. So Daze is another free piece of interaction that fits in this world.
I think Daze is probably a little bit better than Thwart, but I don't know. Play them in the same deck. Give it a try.
Know,
that
right?
does sound funny, yeah.
And there's also another counter spell that I can't remember the name, so I'm hoping we can find it, that I'm pretty sure that you have to discard a blue card and an island. It's a specific, do you know what I'm talking about? It's not Thwart, it's not discard three islands, it's not Commandeer, it's not exile two blue cards.
The one I'm thinking of is Disrupting Shoal.
We could talk about Disrupting Shoal because that is one that has seen play in the Kinnan decks. I've seen that one.
Yeah, this one is hard because it's
confusing.
Yeah, you can exile a blue card with mana value X from your hand rather than pay this card's mana cost. And you can counter a spell if its mana cost is X. So if you want to counter Kinnan, you have to exile a 2-mana value spell from your hand.
Any spell, not a blue spell?
It is a blue card.
A blue card, okay.
You have to exile your own Kinnan from your hand.
And this one, I think it's weird because the mana cost is blue X.
Yeah, but it's rather than paying its mana cost. So like
it's not an additional.
Its alternate cost is you could play blue and one to try to force spike something.
Counter a one drop. But it's still, it's not counter unless they pay
one.
Oh,
yeah, you're right. It is if it's mana value. Is
right? So
normally
this effect, is, you think, in my head, I feel like it's syncopate. It's counter unless they pay what X is. But that's not what it is. It's counter a thing with the mana value of X.
Yeah, so if you want to hard counter a Force of Will, you have to spend seven mana on this. Or pitch, like, your own misdirection to
it. Or piss your own misdirection. Yeah.
I would piss my own misdirection all of the time.
Yeah.
I misdirect my piss.
All the time.
Constantly.
Disrupting Shoal. I think this one is another one that's good in Kinnan, and it can be good in some of these strategies where you're trying to draw as many cards as possible, make as much mana, and then win some way once everyone has been pootered out or whatever.
You need to have all of those options in your hand when like, oh, they could have a one drop, a two drop, a three drop, a four drop, or a five drop. I need to have one of those of each in my hand.
Or a bunch of mana.
I think the card you were talking about was Foil.
Yeah.
You may discard an island and another card.
Any card, not blue.
It could be a second land. It could be an opposition agent, and it just counters a spell.
And it's free.
And it's free then. Yeah.
What's the other mode? Four mana?
It's two and two blue.
Two blue. Okay. I don't think this one is good enough, but if we're looking for as many free pieces of interaction as possible, and we're looking for as many risk studies as possible, and just like, we'll have 10 cards in our hand, one of them could be an island, one of them could be anything else, this is going to be really good.
I think the island stuff is tougher because a lot of decks, even that are two colors, are like cutting down on islands. Like, it's detrimental to have islands because like Carpet of Flowers is a card, and like, it's not that big, but like a lot of times you really only need one because like, if you get Passagude, great, I have Breeding Pool, that's okay still too.
There's
but
a
like,
big cost, and especially even in two color decks, it's just too risky to play too many basic islands because you need your green sources. To not be able to cast your spells when you want to cast them is devastating. It's so bad. And I know this. I know these cards are not particularly good. I'm just looking at other free stuff or whatever.
I think are still considerable, but I think
you
some
have to
of
be
them
like
are
mono
just
blue kind of.
Yeah, some of them are going to be a little bit harder to make work, I think, than others. Like, I think Disrupting Shoal is probably the better ones of those, but at the same time, again, like, that's still also very hard to work out. You kind of have to like make sure that your hand isn't just dead.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. You have to be able to cast your spells also. The goal isn't to stop your opponents from winning the game. The goal is to survive long enough so that you can win the game. They're very different things. And it's going to feel like the first thing. It's going to feel like you're trying to stop your opponents from winning the game, which is part of your strategy. But you also still have to be moving towards a goal of winning the game, even in Kinnan.
But all these quote-unquote bad ones that we talked about are all like hard counters for everything. Like, they can stop creatures. They're not limited on like a mana value or anything like that. As long as you meet the requirement to do it, that things getting stopped.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think that's super important.
Yeah, I agree.
I feel like I had another free interaction piece in the front of my mind, and I don't know where it is now. I don't know if there's anything else that was worth talking about.
Those are the ones that I had.
We could talk about Force of Vigor and Endurance. More free stuff is good, which Kinnan gets to play both of these things. I don't know if they would want to, but it's just more free stuff.
There are more things. Yeah, they technically help you stay alive, but also, like, so does a regular counter spell, too.
I think Endurance is a trap, honestly.
I think so, too. And I don't really think that deck really wants a lot of Force of Vigors because they don't want to get rid of Rhystic Studies. They want Rhystic Studies in play. They can beat Rhystic Studies already.
Yeah, they need to get rid of specifically Underworld Breach or something like that. And normally by the time that the Breach is in play, the Force of Vigor is no good anymore because there's a Pact of Negation in the graveyard or something like that.
All right, we got a little bit more time. Do you want to spend the rest of the podcast just jamming on Rog Ishai real quick?
And sure,
just like kind of what our thoughts are on this deck?
I know Jace, I don't know Jace personally, but I'm pretty sure Jace is the creator of this list. The Jace, the Mind Sculptor himself.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Namkin, his name, I think, is just Jace. So I don't know if we can find their list in particular and just take a look at some of the pieces, but yeah, I guess we should talk a little bit more about Rog Ishai.
I don't need to do like a humongous deep dive.
No, just any specifics that stand out to you once you find the deck. Because this deck is neat. There's a little thing in my stomach that says this is maybe the deck of the week. And I think this is maybe one very competent brewer who knows their deck very well and understands the metagame and how to talk very well, has done well with the deck, and they've communicated with their friends probably on how to win with this deck. It's hard for me to see that this would be a better option than Blue Farm overall in the dark over a long period of time. But Rogrock is insanely powerful. And we already know that Rog'Sai is powerful and Silas does fucking nothing. It doesn't matter. And we already know that Rog Thrasios is very powerful. And Thrasios does a lot. I think in this deck, Ishai does fucking nothing. I don't think it's anything. I mean, yeah, yes, technically it's a bird and you can untap it with Valley Flood Caller.
Colors.
And it can get big. I think it's for colors. That's all it does. It gives you the option to play Silence. I don't know if you want to play Orm's Chant or I don't even think it's on Grand Abolish or whatever.
It is on Orm's Chant. That's just a card I've seen come up a lot more because like you really only need to silence one player a lot of the time. And it's the player who's trying to win, I think.
Or the player who has revealed that they have 15 cards in their hand or whatever, you know?
A couple of interesting cards here. I think Idyllic Tutor is the worst tutor in the world. But Jeskai, like when I played Jeskai Ishai, I can't even say the name of that deck anymore. When I played Jeskai Ishai, the biggest problem was the tutors. Like you didn't have really a lot of tutors. Yeah, exactly. So like this being able to go get your first Rhystic Study, I think even at 6 mana at that point is still way worth it for this deck.
I think Gifts Ungiven is one of the quiet heroes that makes this deck possible because now you have one extra way to set up a win condition. Besides intuition. And I think that's actually huge because that is one of the issues with Kinnan. I have played against Kinnan a lot of times where they have basic control over the game, but they haven't found a way to win. And in this deck, you have stuff like Gifts Ungiven and Mystical Tutor for the Gifts Ungiven and ways to set that up.
Yeah, they're also on Emrakul as another one card win condition.
Emrakul is the mid-range finisher from fucking hell. The fact that if you counter the Emrakul, so what? The trigger's on the stack, you gain control of somebody else's turn. I didn't quite realize how powerful that was until I saw it happen, but in the middle of like mid-range hell, when you can just gain control of somebody's turn who has 15 cards in their hand, you can almost assuredly just like make them kill themselves and set yourself up in a situation where you dominate the board after that.
It is freaking insane what you can do when you get to play as two of the four players in the pod. And then Firestorm is like the other main card. Do you remember this one?
I think I played this card in Brawlin, the shark deck that I had. You remember that Jessica Shark deck, right?
Brawlin and Shabraz.
I think I played this in that deck.
It's one red mana for an instant that lets you choose and discard X cards to deal X damage to each of up to X target creatures or players. And so this is, again, if you have like a billion cards in your hand, you know, you can discard three of them to make three targets take three damage for one mana. That's pretty crazy.
Instant Speed Blasphemous Act might as well be in CDH. Might as well be, you know what I mean? Like it kills exactly what you need and nothing else. It can get rid of like the Dranith and the opposition agent, which allows you to go for the win right there, but still leaving on board the other things that are stopping other players or something.
And then Apple of Eden, Isu Relic is not a great card, but again, something else that is like a one card, like ad nauseum for a deck that can't play an ad nauseum. Yeah. Just like, let me get access to someone else's cards so that way I can piece them together for a win.
And this one's kind of tricky because I feel like a lot of times I see this card where they play the Apple of Eden early before it kind of does anything. And you're like, I can't waste a counterspell on that because Rog'Sai is going right afterwards. So, okay, that has to stay there from there. And then a couple turns go by and it gets back to their turn. And all of a sudden they activate it. And you're like, well, can't really counter an activation. So they get to just like take my hand. It like makes the game all weird and wonky. And I think it's like so good in these Rhystic Study worlds. It really is good.
I think I'm kind of with you where like, I'm not quite sure if this is just like a flash in the pan real quick. Like this was something interesting. And if I play Ishai in the command zone, no one will take my list seriously, so I'm not going to get negative politics acted towards me. I can go, I'm a control deck.
Yeah.
I will help you win, and you get to play the hero at the table instead, and then that way you can like find a window for an instant speed win or something like that. I think that there is a lot of upside to playing something like this. I think that you need to be good at talking and be okay like losing out on a lot of card advantage, because like not having card advantage in the command zone I think is also really tough. And I know that like, Rog'Sai doesn't need it, but I think that's because Rog'Sai has the speed. speed. This deck doesn't have the speed, and it's not like Rog Thrass, where Rog sticks around and makes you mana consistently. You're like sacrificing it to Plunge into Darkness.
Nope.
You're sacrificing it to Infernal Plunge.
And you're just turning Mox Amber on, Springleaf Drum. You know what I mean? There's little things. You're turning on your Fierce Guardianships early. Like, there is like mana in that way.
But it uses Rograk the worst out of all of the Rograk decks in the format, I think.
I think so too.
And I think that's a hard spot to be in. And in the worst color combination. Arguably, blue-red-green is worse than Jeskai, but it uses the tools of in blue-red-green way better.
Yeah, like, green works much better with Rograk and Thrasios and creatures than white does with Rograk and Ishai.
In theory, you know what I mean? An Intuition and Gifts Ungiven deck should be better than a deck that's just like, oh, I'm just fucking around over here.
But Gaia's Cradle is fucking crazy.
Gaia's Cradle's really busted. And this deck doesn't have Gaia's Cradle.
Certainly does not. It only has Flash Photography to copy the Gaia's Cradle. It doesn't have anything
that is it. And even then, their Gaia's Cradle is way worse.
So, I mean, I'm not saying that this deck is bad. I'm sure that it's quite good in the right pilots and the right metagame. This deck is awesome. It's not a deck that I'm interested in. You and I think I'm too turbo-pilled at this point. I would like to win quickly and then go get a snack.
I won't do well with this deck. Like, Blue Farm you can pick up and learn very quickly and do, like, well with and get 25% of your games with, as long as you know what the cards in your deck do. I think you can know what every card in your deck does in this deck and still have a tough time winning the game.
Yeah. Unless you are a seasoned tournament grinder. I do think the seasoned tournament grinders,
I think everyone whose
advantage.
Name is at the top of this Moxfield link is going to be stellar with this deck and insanely scary. But I don't find Ishai to be good after years of playing Ishai.
Ishai is bad, no doubt about that.
But
so is
Rograk. Rograk is cracked.
Rograk is cracked, and that is undeniable. That a zero mana creature in your command zone is undeniably broken. Like I said, Silas does fucking nothing. The best thing that I've ever done with Silas is I have a death touch blocker and you can't attack me and it prolongs my death for an extra turn. That's not actually anything. Maybe I could beseech the mirror and get rid of it. Maybe it can get back one of my chromatic lanterns or something. It does nothing. What do you got?
Psychic Possession. 2/2 blue. Enchantment aura. Enchant opponent. Skip your draw step. But hold up. Whenever enchant an opponent draws a card, you may draw a card.
This is in a list?
No, it's in the sideboard.
4 mana, enchant opponent. Skip your own draw step.
Yeah.
Even if you enchant the opponent, you still skip your draw step.
But you'll still get your card for turn, basically, because when they draw their card for turn, you get a card. So, like, yeah, you skip your draw step, but that just is only upside, because now your mana vault doesn't trigger to deal you damage.
Bad. I don't know anymore, honestly. I don't know anymore.
Oh, I don't have a copy enchantment, but you have a Rhystic Study, and I have this.
Interesting.
We'll still draw one for one.
I do also want to mention a caveat of, like, these decks are some of the few decks that are, I think, actually pretty good against turbo. They're the few decks that can actually stop a good turbo pilot frequently enough, so obviously we are not going to like the deck because it's like our worst matchup or something, but that feels like dog shit card to me. That feels
well,
too
it's
slow.
Not in the deck, so it might be a dog
probably
shit card.
Maybe agree, but maybe that cyber card represents the mindset of the deck.
Of what they're trying to do, yeah. All right, let's end the show.
That's it, right? We talked about free interaction. We talked about Rhystic Studies and whatnot. I think that's enough, right? We might have missed some things, but...
And if we did, let us know in the comments. What other free interactive spells do you play in your CEDH decks that protect you from losing the game?
And if you know why this Rog Ishai deck is so good in a way that we didn't mention, please let us know, too. We would love to hear that. I think we got it, though. Stay alive, draw cards, make mana.
BG's it.
Staying alive.
Oh, yeah, I know that song. At first I was afraid, I was petrified.
Okay, thanks so much for watching. If you'd like to support us directly, you can do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
Abyss AA, E4 Cards and More, Red, Finks MTG, Wandering Around, Mike H, Tom Bieber, Cumulative Upkeep MTG, Nathan Cohen, Mr. Jerby, Okie Toad, Penguin Man, 0089, David Newman, Johnny Denver, Amla, Rocky Hall, Pat Fires, Spangler, Larceny, Roars, Joe Blue, Sparky B, SE Phillip, Holding Groupies, Zach Hartley, Big Legs Banjo, Reactive, Sean in the Ice, The Works 472, Gabriel Garrett, Mace the Ace, Luke Cook, Connor Zippon, Joshua Day, Demon of Rosgrees, Peter Stewart, Corner, Wild Uncle Butts, Luke Quadja, A. Hamid, Scott Hawk, and Baby Jeebus.
If you want to pick up any of our merch, you can do that playtowinmtg.com.
Thank you, Dragon Shield, for supporting the show. Use code PlayToWin5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off.
You can follow us on the internet for more content.
Thank you for watching.
See you next time.
Bub Russell, Devin Morrow, Ruby Supreme, Willow 2998, Turtle 99, Rick Sharticus, Max McCumber, Meta, Ben Finelli, Jason Brooks, Sepharius Sharticus. No, that's sarcastic. Oh, I'm sorry. Mystic Muffin Man, Zachary Coulson, Dalton Poteet, Jan Wildfang, Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson.
Tired of juggling sales tools or spending hours on prospecting just to book a few meetings? Meet Apollo, the go-to-market platform for finding leads, connecting with buyers, and closing deals all in one place. Apollo gives you access to over 210 million contacts and AI that handles all your busy work, finding leads, drafting emails, and even prioritizing your day. So stop paying for 5 different sales tools when one does it all. Visit apollo.io and sign up free today.